Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from PUC examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Shoot, yeah, here we go. It is hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Cowboys news coming up in 20 minutes. Here's Wolchuk with your proper round trip.
All right, so I know Cody Cole's one of the numbers on here, so Bobby's got him down. We got to be on the lookout for his, Eric. Cody will participate in these bits during Biggest L, Biggest Dub. The other numbers that we're texting in about the hacking, I've got to do some research. But Bobby's got a little army out there, and who knows? I wouldn't put it past him. He might have like fake numbers that he's bought to put this out.
Yeah, you could have burners.
But I hope the reaction was not what he was expecting. Because honestly, I just checked, didn't see anything, and I was like, well, this must be Bobby. Up to no good. I love you. It was a good attempt. I got nervous for a second, for a split second. Did I get hacked? Because that would have been awful.
Well, because Bobby probably has the means to hack you and then run roughshod all over your account. And then play the card of, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry this happened to you.
Well, the thing is also Bobby knows that I'm dumb enough to where he doesn't have to hack me. I will just leave my accounts open and he can go in there and post whatever the hell he wants. I've done that one too many times.
Click on obvious phishing links and enter your username and password.
Yeah, he's gotten me. Bobby's gotten me. And he's smart and he's canny and cunning. But not this one. This time, Bob. I knew you were up to something.
We might have a problem at the Open Championship.
What's wrong? Give us an update, Brian.
Bryson DeChambeau, and he might be receiving a penalty in this round. I think he's in second place.
He finished with birdie.
Okay,
to go seven under.
The rules officials are driving him back from the fifth hole, and they asked him to reenact. He was up in the fescue, the grouse, whatever grass you want to call it, the high grass. And they're saying that he might have taken a step to try and prove his lie by stepping on some grass that was behind where the path he'd have taken his club.
Oh, no.
And so they're saying that we could get a little bit of a report that they might have done something to him to penalize him, maybe two strokes. For here, we'll see.
He did bogey that hole.
Yeah. They took him back to the spot, and it looks like the cameras have shown him like aggressively stepping on the grass behind where his club.
Golfers do that sometimes, but maybe you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
At this tournament or on that continent.
Well, there could be some. He could be from going 7 under to maybe 5 under. We'll get probably a little bit of ruling by the time our show gets over today.
All right. Well, we'll keep you updated on that. Until then, let's go around the bases right after this.
You don't know how to play first base.
Scott?
That's right.
It's not that hard, Scott. Tell him, Wash.
It's incredibly hard.
There's no crying in baseball!
You play ball like a girl!
Hey, if for those that don't know, life-changing, the Tommy John underwear.
Could tie it with one swing.
Back in action tonight in Atlanta against the Braves. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, Atlanta's pretty damn good. Well, that's a good thing. Rangers are good against teams that are above 500. They're also really good when they score first. They're 37-11 when they score first. That's the best record in the American League. If they're able to score four or more runs, they've been darn near unbeatable this year. They're 41-9, which is also the best in the American League. 13-9 this season when facing left-handed pitching. They've won 6 of 7. We've talked about that. Justin Foscue is a big reason for this. He's got 5 homers, 6 doubles, 14 RBIs against left-handed pitching this season. That leads the American League. He's been dominant. Now, I'm waiting to see the Rangers lineup. I don't think they've posted it yet. I've been refreshing. Atlanta's got theirs out.
I see quite a bit of talk that DeChambeau is going to be hit with a 2-stroke penalty, but no Rangers lineup yet.
Okay, 2-stroke penalty. That's big. That's going to knock him, out of the top five?
Well, this is where you're at right now, too. You just got to hope that it doesn't cost him a chance. We get down to the final holes, and now he's one back, two back, something like that, you know, where this. But, man, I'm going to say this. I love Bryson DeChambeau. I love the fact he played golf at SMU. I love everything about Dallas guy and all that. He aggressively stepped on the grass. I mean,
he's at fault here.
You watch the video. He is taking a big step right behind the path of where his club would be, and I'd say it's a pretty aggressive. I could see why the RNA gave the ruling that they did, or are about to hand down.
Well, damn. Okay, 2-stroke penalty for Bryson. He was in second place. I'm wondering where he's going to end up on the leaderboard. Let's go to Jake Berger. He owns a career slash line of 362, 424, 810, and 1235 in Atlanta. He's got 7 home runs, 16 RBIs in 16 games in their ballpark. He's been fantastic, and he's got a home run in 4 of his last 6 games at Truist Park and an RBI in 6 straight. Rangers is a club, and this is from 2017. They've got their highest OPS of any ballpark in all of Major League Baseball when playing at Truist. They've won 3 of their last 4 since 2022, and you've got Jock Peterson, Nicky Lopez, who have been good against the Braves in their careers. So this bodes well, at least going into the series. We'll see what happens over the weekend. I already had one person text and be like, oh, you jinxed him. Don't you put that on me, Ricky Bobby. Don't you do that. I'm just giving you the facts and the numbers. The Rangers have been really good, and Jake Berger specifically in Atlanta at Truist Park. They've been good against lefties lately, and they've been good against teams that are above 500. All of that should be a recipe for success, and we win 2 out of 3 at least in a series victory. They got a tough task tonight. It is Chris Sale, who is a dominant lefty on the bump, all-star for the Braves, but Rangers have been good against lefties. So what's going to happen here? Is Chris Sale going to get bopped, or does he end up owning the Rangers? I'm hoping the Rangers bop him around.
Man, this is one hell of a truth serum series, Wolcha, because you're laying it out there, and I think everything checks out, but I'm just having a hard time buying in myself.
You're not believing?
This is a great team. This is one of the 4 best teams.
The Truth Serum series.
Yeah, I'm stealing off Chief.
Oh, I love it, dude. Thank you. We got to keep that thing alive.
Yeah. Not official on the 2-stroker, by the way, for DeChambeau yet.
So it could be a 3-stroker.
No.
Well, I think it would only be 2.
Only 2. Yes.
I mean, a single stroke doesn't seem like enough.
Watching back the exchange he had with the rules officials, it was a very spirited conversation.
He is not happy at all. The RNA is.
He was claiming he took his steps in front of the ball.
Yeah.
Which could be different.
Well, I mean, a 2-stroke for a step in front of the ball, I think.
I haven't seen the Zapruder film.
It makes sense to me.
But
yeah, he is the carts have officially arrived back in the staging area, and maybe now they're all going to go to the scoring area and then kind of assess, and then we should get a ruling here in the next, I'd say, hour or so.
All right, are you concerned? Maybe you should be.
Kind of have a point. Don't you have to step behind your ball to look at the flight path?
Yeah, he is. Angle.
Sorry, Wolchuk.
No. Take it away, angle, boys. Take it away.
The angle that he took.
Last time I got a film.
Have you seen the video?
Yeah, I just found it.
He takes a big heavy step. He's clearing that path pretty good, and I think it's a brilliant move on his part. It's just the fact that TV cameras catch everything now. And I'm sure somebody on the broadcast or some fan that's watching it like, boy, that looks like a really aggressive step there. Boy, that's clearing a path right there. That's how these golfers get caught. Like one time.
Tattletales.
Yeah. They was like, oh, wait, he ground his club. And, you know, like somebody calls you out like, The rules officials don't see it, but then all of a sudden, like, someone calls them out and they go back and check the tape, you know. There was one time where, I forgot who it was, put a towel down, like he was kneeling to play under branches.
Mm-hmm.
He put a towel down to protect, like, his knees, and they called it, like, building your stance. Is what they did. Like someone called in and said,
he just didn't want grass stains on his knees.
Yeah, isn't that building your stance?
People think he's Mike Bassick.
Exactly.
I just am watching the video. I think it's much to do about nothing.
Yeah. Well, they're about to give him 2.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like, dude, he's got to hit the ball.
Well, SMU guy.
Yeah.
One of Dallas's, I think we claim him as one of our 4 or 5.
I can't stand him after what he did to me with the Masters.
Top players out there.
Totally effed up. Didn't even make the cut, printed out his 3D thing. He's just kind of a jerk, in my opinion. But he is a local guy, and I wish him well.
Yeah, I mean, what is he supposed to do, hover? Does he have to find a way to
I'm kind of on Bryson's side here.
Float off the ground.
Well, they're saying that he cleared the path.
But, he probably did a little bit, which I guess is a no-no.
He stepped. He didn't stomp. He was stepping, and it wasn't even right on where it was that he was having to actually hit the ball. I think it's much to do about nothing. Mm. I'm sure he's going to go on a nice rant when this is all said and done.
Yeah, there's no other path he could take to get a view of where he would want to plot his shot. I think he had to step behind there. Any further than that, he's in the jungle of London or whatever, wherever they are.
Yes. Cheating is cheating. He's lucky he's not DQ.
He's playing in Tanzania.
Yeah, it looks like his backdrop right now, he's in the thick of it.
Yeah, they have not taken the two-stroke penalty yet. So
that would take him down to sixth place, then. That would take him in the group with
Sam Burns.
Sam Burns is there, yeah.
I think he mouthed to the officials, like, I'm not going to play tomorrow. He's just going to be done.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
I mean, that's a bit of a poor sport.
He's going to take his clubs and go home.
You can't do that.
Scotty Scheffler's
still got a shot.
He's in the right in the thick of this thing, yeah.
So MLB.com put out each team's best trade chip. For the Rangers, here's the write-up. They don't really have many left.
Mm.
They have a pair of top 100 prospects in Sebastian Walcott, who's number 10, and Caden Scarborough, who's number 63. But the depth of the farm system likely won't net them any major names like it did in 23 when they got Aroldis Chapman, Max Scherzer, and Jordan Montgomery. Assuming the Rangers don't sell and they look at moving big dogs like Corey Seager, Jacob deGrom, Evo, and they stay in Texas, but otherwise, it's looking like they're going to be able to probably just muster up a low-cost leverage arm out of the bullpen because they don't have a whole lot to offer, unless they want to dangle the carrot of Sebastian Volkow, which I don't think they want to do. But that's kind of a bummer to read. The Mariners, they say the starting rotation. Luis Castillo's been out there. The A's, it's their third base, first baseman Tommy White, who's the club's number 7 prospect. And then the Astros have a right-handed pitcher, A.J. Bluebaugh, who's pretty good. And he's a guy who threw at least 2 innings in 9 of his final 11 outings before the All-Star break. And that's a player to keep an eye on that they could end up moving here at the deadline. But every team's got somebody except for the Rangers. It's like you don't have much there. And I guess that's the cost of doing business when you're going for it every year.
I'm concerned because there's nothing wrong.
And I would like to, maybe remind us that how many prospects did we give up to get Mackenzie Gore?
I think 4. Gavin Fien being one, and he was one of your best guys.
So we'll have to ask CY if they have the pieces to make trades for high-leverage bullpen arms, or if they would have to put Walcott on the table in order to get something like that done. I'm only willing to trade Walcott for another player with a really good contract situation.
Like C.J. Abrams that we talked about from the Nats, a shortstop, or a Francisco Lindor type of thing. I'd be open to that.
Are you more open to trading Walcott since he was now injured?
I'm not that worried about it. He'd been pretty healthy, and that injury for a non-pitcher, I think he'll be fine. I'm not confident in prospects turning into great players, and you can get really good guys who have proven they can perform at the big league level. I just don't need any rental players right now.
No rentals. We're trying to go out there and freaking win this.
Walcott already homered in the second rehab game.
Damn right he did. I wonder, don't you think a team would love to get their hands on Josh Smith?
Oh, yeah,
he's got
absolutely
massive value right now, right?
That's a guy that puts butts in seats, man.
I know that the league is big fans of 105 through the fan, the home of Texas Rangers baseball, and there's probably not a more exciting player in all of the Texas Rangers system than what Josh Smith could do, a utility guy that was once thought of as a potential all-star last year this time, okay? That's a guy that can play second, he can play short, hell, if you need him to play first, he can do it. He can play the outfield. I don't know why teams aren't just calling CY and banging down the doors to try and acquire Josh Smith, fellas.
It won't be long before they do, Walchuk.
Thank you. Because people know ball, and I know ball. Josh Smith's the guy that should be coveted. And I think it should be a straight-up swap, actually. C.J. Abrams for Josh Smith. Who's saying no?
Not me.
Not the Rangers. And definitely not the Nats, because they might win out on that deal. Now, Major League Baseball's got their top 50 players here at the All-Star break. The Rangers are a team that not a ton. In this top 50 list.
Not even Josh Smith, huh?
Not Josh Smith. In fact, Josh Smith was 51. He's on the outside looking in.
Yeah, first one out.
He was right in by yours truly over here. Put him at 51. What's going on, guys? What's going on?
Oh, they're showing us another angle of where the broadcast camera got in there. I was looking at the fairway shot of him. He did step back in there pretty good, but I think it's a defensible spot. I didn't unnecessarily step back there. I had to step back there to see where my shot was going.
It looked worse the way that the grass bent. It's not my fault that I've got a heavy foot.
Got to visualize these things.
C.J. Abrams, by the way, number 20.
My pre-shot routine.
20th best player on here. Your top 10 players in Major League Baseball at the break. Bobby Witt Jr., shout out to Colleyville. Christopher Sanchez, the pitcher for the Phillies. Dylan Cease, my Jewish brethren, the pitcher for the Blue Jays. James Wood, outfielder of the Nats. The Nats have a couple players here in the top 20. Cam Schlittler, right-handed pitcher for the Yankees at 6. The Miz, Jacob Mizorowski at 5. Otto Lopez, shortstop for the Marlins, really underrated player. Yordan Alvarez comes in at 3. Pete Crow Armstrong of the Cubbies at 2. But no surprise, number 1, best player in baseball at the All-Star break, it's Shohei Ohtani. Mm. And yes, Mike Tyson, he is a man. For those wondering.
Yeah, he was a little confused by that at the ESPYs the other night, wasn't he?
Yep, he's got the kibbles and bits, not the taco. All right, MLB owners are reportedly prepared to cancel games in 2027 if players maintain their anti-salary cap stance. This is according to Jeff Passan. All of the players who spoke anonymously to Passan said unanimously that if Major League Baseball owners continue to push for a salary cap, they would be willing to lose games as well. So we talked about this yesterday, and we're hoping and we're praying that we don't get a lockout. But both sides right now, very stern. Owners, we're prepared to cancel games. Players, well, we're willing to lose games. Something's got to give. And I hope it doesn't result in us having to suffer with no bleeping baseball.
That would be horrible. My gut tells me this is negotiation on the front end. We're going scorched earth on each other. We're willing to lose all the games. In the end, it's too much money.
Yeah, you know, money talks.
So many players with over $10-20 million. Like, if you don't play for a month, that's $3-4 million.
A lot of money.
And for the owners, it's tens of millions or $100 million every month that you're not playing. It's just too much. But what we know about these sides since '94 is they're very good at posturing. And both sides understand the leverage game of threatening worst-case scenario if you don't agree to what we want.
No, very true. And the Rangers lineup just dropped. It is Foscue leading off, so that's great news. White Langford in the lineup. He's batting second, starting in left field. Brandon Nimmo in right field batting third. The Jungle Cat, Josh Young's actually your cleanup hitter tonight, and he's playing third. Berger at first. Duran starting at short. Cam Colley, our guy at center field. Elias Diaz is catching for Cal Quantrill, and then Nicky Lopez getting the start at second, so still no Corey Seager.
All right, it's time now for the C-Note, and we'll jump into headlines around your Cowboys, including a discussion of the most underappreciated player on the Cowboys. He might be the most underappreciated in the entire league next year in the Nation.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. It's time now for the C-Note, Cowboys News of the Evening. Segment is brought to you by the Frankels. If you have been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. The judges are in their building there at Royal Birkdale deciding if they're going to give Bryson DeChambeau a two-stroke penalty. We'll let you know whatever conclusion that they reach. I just think it's good that they're spending this amount of time on it because it's not an open and shut case. DeChambeau cheated. I think this one's up for interpretation. And I think FIFA should take note of this. You know, what they did to Balogun, just like, well, the ref decided you get a red card, so you're out the rest of this game and the next game with no recourse. You know, I hope that's the lasting part of that Balogun saga, is that future teams in the World Cup are going to have some sort of an appeal process established. I think that would be appropriate. Evan Grant with other shortstop news. Walcott is expected to DH and lead off for Double A Frisco tonight against Tulsa. So that's pretty cool. And hopefully, you know, he can make the most of the rest of this summer, dominate there, and we can talk about him being up at the big league level next year. Ryan Gold, this is breaking news. Arizona Cardinals executive. He was named director of college scouting about 15, 16 months ago. He has been with them 13 years, indefinitely suspended this afternoon, was providing draft picks to somebody who is apparently using that info to place bets on who the Cardinals were about to pick on Kalshi. He didn't do that himself, but somebody did. Was he in on it? I don't know. He was also betting on college and NFL games, so he's probably Dunsky. Don't you think, Brian?
Absolutely. This is when you sign an NFL contract, the league basically says that they are the judge and the jury on you. So, yeah, I would say this guy's probably done.
Got to be on the lookout for those signs of a gambling problem.
Yeah, the NFL, New York, they will. They're not going to take any guff on this one.
That's. I mean, how do you even begin to imagine talking to your family there, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, honey, I got fired.
Sorry.
What'd you do?
Flushed your entire career down the drain.
Yep. Good news is that lake house that I was gambling on, we could go move there now.
Yeah, we do have a bit of a nest egg.
Yeah, we do have a little bit. We can live on the winnings that I was paid. And yeah,
hopefully you got some winnings. That would just be an absolute nightmare. He's
paid for the information, I'm sure.
Working in the NFL for 13 years. They're going to get you. They're tracking you. They're monitoring everything. They're obsessed with finding people that might have some sort of an unfair advantage. And they're losing too, right? They got like AI programs that are scouring all the accounts, constantly looking for any kind of red flags. Just, you know, steer clear. And again, don't wager more than you can afford to lose. So when you lose, you're not, you know, prompted to do something unethical to try to get your money back.
And it'll be, I don't know how long it'll take before it starts to slow down, but this will not be the last one.
Nope.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I felt like we've seen enough of this over the last 3 or 4 years that the people involved should, you know, be a lot more cautious. But that greed's undefeated.
I'll never forget when Mike Tice got caught selling his Super Bowl tickets.
Oh, geez.
And we were all thinking, like, everybody was going, God dang, Tice got caught, head coach. How about that? That's crazy. And like, everybody was going, yeah, they're dumbass. Like, you know, he just didn't do it the right way. That didn't stop anybody from selling their Super Bowl tickets, you know? The Mike Tice thing was like, he went about it the wrong way.
Kevin Clark going about things the right or wrong way?
I'm on a soccer podcast.
Is he doing soccer podcasts?
He's doing soccer podcasts. I thought I saw him up with some ESPN soccer folk.
NFL podcasting has blown up.
Okay.
And
it sure has.
He was on First Take yesterday.
All right.
And said Dak is the most underappreciated player in the NFL, saying he's become a victim of Jerry Jones roster building. Emmanuel Acho going viral with a response saying the reason Dak isn't more appreciated is because he peed down his leg against the 49ers. So, you know, Dak is apparently still a polarizing figure. We just talked about this a couple of days ago, that it seems like the polarizing nature around Dak Prescott has subsided over the last couple of years because he's played so well in a variety of circumstances now, and he's played well post-great offensive line. You know, sure. That's kind of the final boss.
Yeah.
So I didn't think he was going to become polarizing, but Dak as the reason the Cowboys lost to the 49ers, I have a significant problem with that. It wasn't his best day. Aaron Rodgers has had some horrible playoff games. Patrick Mahomes has damn near been shut out. You know, these kinds of things will happen if you play football long enough. You're going to come up against a defense with a great game plan, or you're going to have a bad day. But I just don't think the sample size is large enough. And I do believe Dak Prescott would be a multiple-time champion had he been with Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs over the last decade.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the front office and the team around him. I do think he's had, on offense, at various parts in his career, whether it's been the line, the receivers, the running back, he's had enough to do it. And that playoff game against the 49ers, the difference is the guys that you named have won Super Bowls, right? So if you get the Super Bowl and you have success in the postseason, then you can afford to have a 49er game. People just won't lump that against you forever.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. If Dak could finally, maybe it's this year, if things can finally click and he can achieve that, even just getting to a Super Bowl, then all of that will kind of be forgotten. Until then, it's going to be viewed as the playoff failures, and it's, you know, it's probably unfair to him, but when you're the quarterback, that's kind of what comes with the territory, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of them to an extent here. I think they both make fair points. There have been times where Dak was not given the requisite help that he needed. Last year's a prime example. You gave him the single worst defense any one of us have ever seen before. There was no chance he could even make the playoffs, no matter how good he was. And he was really damn good. But there have been times as well where the Green Bay game, the home Green Bay game in 23, like, everyone has to shoulder blame there, and he's right towards the top of the list. And some of those Niners games are very fair to put that on him. Like, you've had chances. Your defense played well. And
yeah, that 19-point game, they did play well.
Yeah. I mean, you had the road game in San Francisco and the home one where he's sliding as time's expiring. Defense played well that day, too.
But what we're suggesting is there's just something so insurmountable about postseason football for Dak. It's not bad luck. It's not your surroundings. It's that there's something broken about you after passing all of these challenges for a decade in football. Is that what you're saying? Like, when the stakes get higher, Dak shrivels? I can't imagine that guy, you know? I mean, okay, so the 49ers run game, the Matt LaFleur approach in Green Bay, like, those running games had their day against Dak in two out of three of those games, right? Your running game itself is completely null and void in those games, partially because Tony Pollard got hurt. But, like, in the postseason, you have to be able to stop the run and run it yourself. And you're asking Dak to overcome both of those things that are happening to his team? You can't run the ball, you can't stop the run, and we're saying there's something broken with you as a competitor if you can't carry your team to victory in that situation.
Well, I'm just asking you to score 24 points when San Francisco scores 23, you could only score 17. I'm asking you to score 20 points when San Francisco scores 19 and you only scored 12.
Yeah.
I mean, your quarterback has to shoulder plenty of blame for that.
Yeah, but
the Joneses, I don't want to let the Joneses off the hook for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
The Joneses need to understand what they have at quarterback here, which is pretty dang good. Get him more help. I understand that. But when your defense is giving up 19 points in a playoff game, and I'm paying you like you're the best quarterback in the league, gosh dang it, you better score more than 12 freaking points, bro.
And I totally hear that, and that's kind of why I started by saying this has happened to all the great quarterbacks. I think what's happened to Dak is a very small sample size on teams that are built just to get into the playoffs, not win in the playoffs. You know, if you give him teams like the ones that are winning, and along with that a bigger sample size, I think ultimately he gets the job done, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I would bet on him getting the job done if he was in some better situations, for sure. But, like, that's a pretty good situation when your defense giving up 19 points.
Yeah, your defense is giving up. Cowboys offense, the one that they lost 24-17, I mean, they did have Zeke and Pollard. That was the Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and CeeDee Lamb. And then Cedric Wilson's your wide receiver.
But on these
four
days, they didn't produce.
Yeah, but,
you know,
and neither did he.
That goes on to him. You know, and I see, like, to your point, I agree with you. Like, it's not all on the quarterback. But at some point, you got to be the guy and go and do it. Like, when Joe Burrow took the Bengals to the Super Bowl, part of the reason why Ive and others have praised him is that was not a great offense he was on. They had Ja'Marr Chase, but their offensive line was historically one of the worst in playoff history. But he found a way to get them there. Like, sometimes as a quarterback, if you're going to do it, you've got to be able, if things are not perfect around you, to find a way to do it. When Mahomes won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, it was kind of like a rebuild offense. And now we're starting to see it. Like, that offense is falling apart, but he's taken guys where Juju Smith-Schuster's his best receiver. He's got Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Those are the guys that he's winning Super Bowls with. Like, you're not always going to have the elite Eagles roster. The great quarterbacks find a way to overcome that. And Dak, unfortunately, in the playoffs, hasn't been that guy.
And unfortunately, I think the next time Dak is in the playoffs will be the first time that he's had a coaching staff as good as the ones that have sent him
home. That's
fair. Now, I'm with you there. That's 100%.
Fair. Okay, we got to run. Krusty's Corner Time. Brian, where are you taking us?
Yeah, we looked at the defensive coaches that are calling those for their defensive coordinators. We looked at those guys. Let's look look at the offensive quarters and the new ones in the league. We'll talk about
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Those guys next.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Bryson DeChambeau has received a two-stroke penalty for improving his lie on the fifth hole. He is now 5-under par for the tournament. After finishing with back-to-back birdies to get to 7, he gets the bad news. Your leader, Lucas Herbert, at 8-under par. Cam Young leading a group at 6-under. Here's Broadus with Krusty's Corner.
Hey, hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's gonna teach you 5 new words!
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Broadus.
Thank you very much, Lucius. Always appreciate you playing that. Thank you, Hurtado Barbecue and Reliant, for being a part of this one as well. I'm sitting there thinking, because, like, this time next week, I'll be getting ready for go to training camp. Leaving on Sunday. And be joining you guys from Oxnard. So looking forward to that. And then looking forward to having you guys there. So football season is around the corner.
Do we fly in the following weekend?
You do.
Is that how it's going to work?
You do. Yeah, you
do. Oh, man. Well, thanks for going out there early for us. That's amazing.
Well, what am I?
It's like pulling teeth to get him to go out there.
Yeah. Just like, oh, gosh, fine.
I'm going to do my best, though. I will do my best to not oversell or overhype anybody.
Yeah, we know that's your commitment.
It's my commitment to making sure, like, well, hey, so-and-so looked good in practice today.
We're going to pull it out of you.
Good thing is you won't get anything in pads until we're there. That's when
the
pads
I know.
Really
that's,
come
yeah, a lot
I'm
of,
excited for that.
It's kind of a lot of underwear Olympics, but it'll be nice to be out there, see them how they line up and running into people and stuff like that. nothing new to report on Taylor Farms in my digestive system.
That's good
so
news.
All good there. Yesterday we did the new defensive coordinators in the league. I want to do something with you guys. I'm going to name a guy, and first off, I'd just like you to tell me, yes, I'd like to have this guy as my offensive coordinator. And then the second thing I want you to tell me is, yeah, I think he's going to have success or he's not going to have success. Now, maybe you say, I'd like to have this guy as my coordinator, but I don't think he's going to have success. But just give me that answer when I go to you, right?
Yeah.
If you don't mind. And I just want to see where you guys are on some of these hires. And Dawson, I'll start with you because this is the top one. By the way, this is a list coming off from the Athletic. This is where I got their work. And so the number one guy they've got listed is head coach now, Mike McCarthy with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Dawson, I will start with you. You've already seen him as your OC, but Pittsburgh, do you want him as your OC? And or do you not want him as your OC? And how you feel about him?
I mean, I'd be terrified if I was Steelers fan right now just because of how bad it ended with him and Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And you really need to be pretty heavy-handed with Aaron Rodgers, getting him to try to attack the middle of the field more, getting him to hold onto the ball more, and getting him warmed up to under-center play action, which are three things that he's probably going to fight you on. And when last we saw this soap opera, he was, you know, just talking so poorly about Mike McCarthy. Schematically, I think McCarthy has done a pretty nice job of you know, innovating while remaining true to who he is as a West Coast coordinator. Like, he's not the worst old school play caller you can have. And he brought in Brian Angelico, who was working with Kevin O'Connell and the Minnesota Vikings,
okay,
to sort of, you know, try to upgrade the way that he looks at it even more. So I think there's reason to believe, but no, it would definitely not be my choice.
Chief, how about Clint Kubiak for the Las Vegas Raiders, named as the head coach and as your play caller? He's going to take that over. Are you on board with Clint Kubiak as your play caller?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you just saw what he did with Sam Darnold and company with the Seahawks. So, yeah, I think he's an up-and-coming guy who is now getting the head coach bump. I believe in what he did with the Seahawks. If Mike McDonald is hiring you to be his play caller, I think there's just some respect right there. That's the best defensive mind in the league. And the proof was in the pudding last year with what they did with Sam Darnold. So, yeah, I think the Raiders got themselves a really good one.
How about you, Wooly? I'm going to go with you on this one. I'm going to go with the hiring of the Los Angeles Chargers of Mike McDaniel.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a McDaniel fan. It's unfortunate that it didn't work out for him as a head coach in Miami. But, I mean, we talked about he's got a lot of talent there with the Chargers. The offensive line, if they can stay healthy, is a good unit. Herbert's very talented. He's just been terrible in the postseason. So is he able to help him get over that hump? I also think Harbaugh, going through his history not only at Michigan but even with the 49ers previously, and then now with the Chargers, Jesse Minter going and getting a new job, he's been a good guy that can evaluate, okay, this would be a good hire for me as a coordinator. So the one thing about McDaniel is Eric pointing out with the Dolphins, he never seemed to really evolve. But year one with the Chargers, that shouldn't be a problem. It's just after year one, what does he do once there's a little bit of a book out on how he wants to run this offense?
Yeah, but I also think that he was so limited with the fact that they tied themselves to Tua, and there was just only so much that you could do with a quarterback like that. He specializes in the run game. Like, with a bad offensive line, they were still extremely explosive in the run game. So it's the short yardage stuff that I think they had some big problems with. But with Justin Herbert now, I think he's going to have a lot more at his disposal, and his creative brain is probably drawing up some special things. Even that move with Keaton Mitchell, who's a jitterbug back from Baltimore.
Incredible.
If he can stay healthy with him and Hampton, plus the three tight ends that they have, I would be very excited if I was a Chargers fan. It's just their schedule's super difficult in a ton of ways, not only with the teams they have to play, but also with like the rest advantages. They're going to be on short weeks a ton. So I don't know that the team is going to be overly successful, but I do think that offense will be legit.
Dawson, in a surprising move, Sean Payton names Davis Webb at Denver as his offensive coordinator and gives him the play calling to keep him around. I'm honestly shocked that he did it. How are you feeling about Davis Webb?
You know, I read that Sean Payton Seth Wickersham article quite a bit a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago or whatever it was out, and there was a nugget in there that Sean Payton will not have you on his staff unless he believes that you are a difference making mind or you have the potential to be one. And the fact that he gave this to Davis Webb to keep other teams from poaching him away makes me feel like, wow, that's like a double endorsement coming from Sean Payton. But I got to ask you, does he have a coaching tree? Like, does he have an eye for developing coaches? Because that's really what this is all about.
Yeah, he's had these guys with the Saints. You know, he had those guys that they stayed with him forever.
Pete Carmichael,
yeah, and Sean was always... And those guys were kind of coaching it up and, like, you know, running the meetings, and Sean was then, you know, calling the plays. But I don't, you know, the coaching tree for Sean Payton.
Dan Campbell, maybe?
That's the major one right there.
Dennis Allen?
Yeah, Dennis Allen.
But, yeah, Dennis Allen, not successful as a head coach. Right?
See, I think Sean Payton is such a control freak and a maniac, and he's accounting for so much in his head that it's not a great environment for other people to grow inside of.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want the hot shot dudes that could go on to be successful.
I don't think he does either. That's why. But
this is the first time with Webb that maybe he's changing.
Campbell is completely different from any other, you know.
Yeah, he's unique.
He's like the unicorn, I guess, of the coaches, because – That the style and the whole bravado. I mean, like, when you look at what Dan Campbell was doing at like with the Dolphins, there were things there that even before Sean got him, that was like, okay.
Yeah, he was the interim.
Yeah,
when they fired Philbin, I think
Joe Brady and Declan Doyle, who are two hot names. Brady just got the head coaching job with the Bills. Was there with him and with the Saints as an assistant. And then Declan Doyle.
Doyle just got a job too, so we don't know Ravens. About him.
I'm excited about Doyle if I'm a Ravens fan.
So I mean, maybe those are two guys that make his tree look better. But otherwise, yeah, it's not a lot to be like, oh, this dude's got an awesome tree of coaches out here.
Willie, how about Matt Nagy with the Giants?
That's terrible. I don't know why in the world anybody would want to hire Matt Nagy.
Is Frank Reich in the same class with the Jets?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a retread guy. Now, as an offensive coordinator, maybe it's better than a head coach, but like, Nagy didn't even make the Chiefs any better. Their offense was bad. You know, like, if he was coming off of a Super Bowl season with Kansas City or something, then sure. Yeah. But he wasn't good as an OC, and he wasn't really even the play caller there. That was more shared responsibility with him and Andy. I don't know why you'd be excited about bringing him in. And Frank Reich just had a terrible stint with the Carolina Panthers.
And it was terrible. He was not good at Stanford either, when they just did one year helping out there. And I'll throw Sean Mannion in this thing in Philadelphia too. as another one that I'm kind of scratching my head on that one. I, as a guy that kind of pulls for the Cowboys, I'm hoping that Sean Mannion, Matt Nagy, and I'm hoping also too our guy David Blau, right?
Mm-hmm.
With
a local guy.
So kind of
the Sean Mannion one, I think could be terrifying because he's gonna try to put the Eagles totally modernized here in a Shanahan style system coming from Minnesota. Like there's some potential there.
Yeah.
That might revive Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley. Make him a good offense once again. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, guys.
Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40 here in the G-Bag Nation. We got a football fix coming up. Well, Chuck and I need it. Where are you taking us?
We got a coaching story from Mac Brown and dropping singles tighten up. And which NFC's team defense improved the most? Is it the Cowboys next?
Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.